The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, Cecile Richards on Making Trouble, Activism, and How Young People Will Change the World. This article was written by Brittany McNamara on January 20th, and there is a note. On Monday, January 20th, 2025, Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America from 2006 to 2018, passed away from a brain tumor. She was 67 years old. As announced by her family in a statement, she was surrounded by loved ones, including her ever-loyal dog, Ollie. Richards, the daughter of former Governor Ann Richards of Texas, was one of the most well-known and outspoken defenders of reproductive rights. In this 2018 Teen Vogue interview, Richards spoke to young people candidly about her career journey, activism, and positive disruption. For Cecile Richards, getting in trouble was scary at first. She was in seventh grade, and she wore a black armband to school to protest the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. But after sitting in the principal's office at her school, Cecile would learn to get over her fear of being reprimanded because the moment signified something greater. "I realized it didn't take that much to get the attention of the principal," Cecile told Teen Vogue at the Teen Vogue Summit on June 2nd. "Wearing a black armband wasn't the scariest thing ever, but the fact that he even noticed and was upset, it sort of made me realize how much power I potentially had." In her new book, Make Trouble, Standing Up, Speaking Out, and Finding the Courage to Lead, My Life Story, the former president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, PPFA, and Planned Parenthood Action Fund, PPAF, talks about, well, making trouble. Cecile, who recently stepped down from her post with PPFA, details the early instances in her life in her book that showed her the potential to make change when you make waves, and much of it started with that armband. Throughout her career, Cecile took that power she sparked in seventh grade and wielded it to make change. She first worked as an organizer for low-wage workers, before moving on to become deputy chief of staff for House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi. In 2006, Cecile became the president of Planned Parenthood. "I've always had the good fortune of having a job that made somebody mad. I think that if you're not making somebody mad, you're not really trying hard enough in terms of really fighting for the things that are important," she said. But Cecile doesn't make trouble just because. "Change is hard," she said. She cited the civil rights movement, noting that the leaders disrupted the status quo to do good. And achieving that, she said, is what pushes her to do more. "What keeps me going is the wins. It might have took decades, but we finally got birth control for everyone in this country. Maybe it was hard, but we finally opened a Charleston, South Carolina, Planned Parenthood that provides transgender care to everyone in the state. That, to me, it's worth those fights. Not just to make people mad and make trouble, but to really make a change and make a difference." Not everyone can make trouble in the way that Cecile does, or even at all. A 2012 report from the Department of Education suggested that young black children, particularly boys, are punished more harshly in public schools, including increased rates of suspension and expulsion compared to their white peers. Excessive punishment in schools can contribute to incarceration rates when young people grow up in what's known as the school-to-prison pipeline. Beyond that, a Vox analysis of FBI data showed that black people are more likely to be shot by police than white people. Nearly a quarter of transgender people reported experiencing harassment by police in a 2011 national survey. And in February, police started the deportation process after an undocumented man in Washington called law enforcement for help. So, not everyone can stand for a cause, even if it's just wearing a black armband. That's why, Cecile said, those who can participate in activism must. Being able to make trouble is a real privilege, and there are a lot of people and a lot of young people in this country who don't even make trouble and suffer the consequences, she said. I think the important thing to me is those of us who can, we need to be doing even more. Cecile called on people with privilege to stand with Dreamers, the LGBTQ community, and any other marginalized group that needs allies to advance a cause. It's important that the rest of us do a lot more, not in their name, but in support of them. That, to me, is what this is all about, she said. I think it is important for people to protect themselves, protect their own safety. But for those who can, they need to do more than they've ever done before. As for Cecile, she said she's not sure what she'll do next, but she said there are no shortages of causes in which she thinks she could help. But beyond what she will do, she's inspired by what young people are already doing. And that's part of the reason she stepped down at Planned Parenthood. We are in this moment of total disruption, of culture, of our economy, of politics, where a whole generation of young people are saying we want to be impactful and we want to be involved. To me, anything I can do to invest in them, lift them up, give them the reins, is really exciting. And it's part of the reason why I stepped aside at Planned Parenthood, she said. We've been investing in young people for the last 12 years, and now it's really important that we make space for them to lead. Leading is something Cecile said she's already watching young people do. In a conversation at the Teen Vogue Summit with Deja Fox, Cecile highlighted how Deja challenged Republican Arizona Senator Jeff Flake at a town hall meeting in 2017 on the issue of his vote to reallocate Title X family planning funding when she was just 16 years old. Deja is just one example of young people taking the reins, she said. For other young people who want to get involved but aren't sure where to start, Cecile advised them to simply start wherever they see an opportunity. I've never seen so much organic organizing. Young people getting together and saying, I want to do something. Whether it's about sexual assault, the dress code in their school, you name it, she said. There are no rules anymore. Don't wait for someone to ask you to do it. If you see something that is upsetting you, or something that needs doing, you're probably the person to go do it. If you still feel unprepared to jump into activism, Cecile advised volunteering on a campaign. It's a place, she said, where you'll not only learn most of what you need to know to be an activist, but you'll make connections that could prove valuable to your future work. Of course, it can be hard to get the confidence to jump in and make change, especially if it involves making trouble. For that, Cecile advises thinking of the worst possible outcome of what you're trying to do. If it's failure, then you've imagined your worst fear, making it easier to face. But if your biggest fear is that you'll succeed and take on a huge responsibility, you've got your work cut out for you, just like Cecile did more than 12 years ago when she almost didn't show up for her interview at Planned Parenthood because she was worried that she may fail or that she may succeed. If we don't try things we don't know that we'll be good at, we'll never know, she said. Sometimes it will lead you to the thing that is right for you. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. As LA fires burn, does empathy have to smolder? This article was written by Emma Rader on January 10th, and there is a note. In this op-ed, writer Emma Rader reflects on unempathetic social media responses to the devastating Los Angeles fires and what they say about how desensitized we are to tragedy. For the past few days, I've been glued to my phone, scrolling X and TikTok, and refreshing the news to follow the devastating fires ripping through Los Angeles. I've cried with and for friends and strangers who've lost everything. Homes, pets, wardrobes, family photo albums, their entire lives. The outpouring of resources and awareness is inspiring. Practically every Instagram story on my feed features a link to donate to the Los Angeles Fire Department or a comprehensive list of resources for those affected. The wildfires have spurred incredible acts of generosity, and these reflect some of the better aspects of human nature. But I was naive to assume our country was unified in its show of support for Los Angeles. Social media comment sections reveal a darker reality, a compassion crisis fueled by political division and a growing desensitization to tragedy. There are a few common threads I'm seeing in the negative comments. Hatred for celebrities. The belief that only famous, rich people and Democrats live in Los Angeles. And a sort of scoffing attitude that people shouldn't grieve lost possessions when their lives are at stake. All of those sentiments are compounded by the social media algorithm, which traffics in hate clicks and rage bait and benefits from making us all loathe one another. Studies have shown that excessive social and traditional media consumption can reduce empathy. It makes sense that, amid an overload of painful information, our brains fight off a constant state of despair by forcing us to feel less. But many users have sprinted past numbness to downright vitriol. While scrolling through TikTok, I saw hundreds of comments echoing the idea of, "You're rich, you will be fine." Others pointed to Californians' choices to live in the state and vote blue as the root of their misfortune. It's worth noting that many have shown a similar lack of empathy for Floridians who vote Republican and are impacted by hurricanes. Some of these insensitive remarks were left on the videos of celebrities like Heidi Montag and Whitney Cummings, who both lost their homes in the wildfires, but most were left on the profiles of so-called normal people. Gen Z and millennials have long held an eat-the-rich mindset, and we're not unjustified in our frustration with the ultra-wealthy. The mega-rich are only getting richer, with America's top 1% holding almost a third of the country's wealth, more than the 50% of Americans who make up the middle class. But anybody who has been to Los Angeles and walked the boardwalk in Venice Beach or strolled through downtown knows that the city and its suburbs are as diverse in socioeconomic status as it gets. Los Angeles County's poverty rate is nearly 3 percentage points higher than that of the United States as a whole. The county's median income levels are close to representative of the national values, but LA's per capita income of $44,319 is far below the estimated 96,500 it takes to live comfortably in a major U.S. city. "Thankful we still have each other," wrote Janae Aiko. "Starting from scratch." Even if it were only the richest of the rich, and celebrities losing their homes and possessions in the wildfires, that would not void us, as a nation and as humans, of our duty to feel compassion. The truth is that people are returning to their homes in L.A. to find ruins and flattened neighborhoods. Some of those people are celebrities, who are posting candidly about what they and their communities have lost. "This house wasn't just a place to live. It was where we dreamed, laughed, and created the most beautiful memories as a family," Paris Hilton wrote, alongside a video of the wreckage of her home in Malibu. "To see it reduced to ashes, it's devastating beyond words. What breaks my heart even more is knowing that this isn't just my story. So many people have lost everything. It's not just walls and roofs. It's the memories that made those houses homes." The financial freedom to purchase a new house does not replace the memories that are lost in a fire. Some people will need shared resources and media attention more than others, and people do not need to be thoughtful about where they put their money and time. But it is okay for people to mourn the tangibles as well, such as a favorite pair of jeans or a letter from a family member who has since passed. Those items are invaluable in their own way. While the majority of responses to the LA wildfires have reflected love and support, the many comments that lack empathy or even push blame on Californians highlights the urgent need for people to stop scrolling and rediscover compassion. I acknowledge that, in many ways, younger generations have been dealt an unfair hand with the normalization of chaos and a sensationalized, nonstop news cycle. It's terrifying that, in the first 2 weeks of 2025, the U.S. has already dealt with a wave of terror, violence, and natural disasters. It's even scarier that it all feels par for the course. But this constant stream of negativity is not a reason to turn against one another. It is grounds for coming together. As our generation enters adulthood, we are uniquely positioned to lead change, but only if we recognize the negative impacts of constant doom scrolling and polarized discourse. Empathy is not a finite resource. We have the capacity to feel for people in North Carolina and Florida, while also hurting for people in Los Angeles. Imagine waking up one morning to find that everything you love and worked hard for is gone. Really bear the pain and the powerlessness of that. We're all human. Let's start feeling it. Our next article from TeenVogue.com is Meta forcing users to follow President Trump and VP Vance? The drama explained. Here's why you should check your following tab. This article was written by Elizabeth Logan on January 23rd, and there is a note. This article was originally published by Glamour. If you're an Instagram user, you may want to check your following tab to make sure you're only following the accounts you mean to. Apparently, shortly after the 2025 inauguration, social media users found that on Instagram and Facebook, which are both owned by Meta, they were following President Trump and Vice President Vance without ever choosing to do so. But is this a psyop, a glitch, or a secret third option? Here's everything you need to know in this edition of TLDR. Give me the TLDR. On January 21st, the day after the inauguration, chatter started to spread online that Meta was artificially inflating Trump's and Vance's follower counts by adding people who never intended to follow them. The evidence was all anecdotal, but widespread enough that the company responded. Their explanation is that the executive branch's accounts are rolled over when a new administration comes into power. So if you were following Biden and Harris, well, now that's Trump and Vance. A spokesperson for Meta also said that it may take some time for all of the follow/unfollow requests to go through, explaining why some people are reporting that they had to unfollow the accounts multiple times before it stuck, or that the platform won't let them unfollow. Wait, I need more. What's the background here? There's also confusion because Harris and Biden's posts have been archived, and maybe the current POTUS accounts are new, but the handles were switched. Or, honestly, it's pretty confusing. And while Meta insists that this is just standard operating procedure, and the same thing happened in 2021 and 2017, there are users who claim they never followed any political accounts and are still experiencing the issue. So, to quote Oprah, what is the truth? Conspiracy heads may point to Meta founder Mark Zuckerberg's recent alignment with the right wing and the Trump administration. He not only attended the inauguration, but recently announced that Facebook would stop fact-checking and dismantle its diversity programs. What does the internet think? They're pretty annoyed. While social media will always have glitches, you'd think that the last two elections would have given the company ample time to prepare for these handovers and ensure that no extra accounts are automatically added and that unfollowing is as easy as tapping a screen. Am I going to care about or remember this in 2 weeks? Depends on how long it takes for the platform to get its ducks in a row. The more pressing issue for the online community is probably that the guy who bought X is, intentionally or unintentionally, hyping up the nation's Nazis. And even though he could literally just post, "I do not endorse Nazism," so far he hasn't. Wonder what that's about. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Ariana Grande and Ethan Slater celebrate her first Oscar nomination with Glinda Pink Balloons. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on January 23rd. Ariana Grande is officially an Oscar nominee for her performance as Glinda the Good Witch in Wicked, and she's celebrating with fellow castmate and boyfriend Ethan Slater with an homage to her character. On January 23, 2025, shortly after the 2025 Oscar nominations were announced, Ethan Slater took to his Instagram to give fans a peek at their celebrations, which included a handful of Glinda-coated pink balloons. Slater posted a picture of Ariana Grande holding the balloons while checking her phone perched over a big hotel window overlooking what appears to be a European city. Grande is nominated for Best Actress in a Supporting Role, a coveted title that feels even more special since this marks her first ever Oscar nomination. Before Slater posted a peek at the celebrations, Grande also took to her own account to react to her nod, sharing that the honor had brought her to tears and using the opportunity to post a handful of throwback photos. "Picking my head up in between sobs to say thank you so much to the Academy for this unfathomable recognition," Grande wrote in her post. "I cannot stop crying, to no one's surprise. I'm humbled and deeply honored to be in such brilliant company and sharing this with Tiny Ari, who sat and studied Judy Garland singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow just before the big, beautiful bubble entered. In her note, Grande also took the opportunity to thank Wicked director John M. Chu and her co-star Cynthia Erivo, who also snagged the nomination for Best Actress in a Leading Role. In total, Wicked has 10 nominations for the 2025 Oscars, making it the second most nominated feature, only after Emilia Perez, and tied with The Brutalist. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Ella Emhoff Inauguration Day post reflects on her time as second daughter. This article was written by Teen Vogue staff on January 21st. Outgoing second daughter Ella Emhoff commemorated her family's time in the White House in an Inauguration Day post on Instagram, saying the past 4 years came with the highest highs and lowest lows. Emhoff, the stepdaughter of Vice President Kamala Harris and daughter of Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, said she was truly feeling the full spectrum of emotions. Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th president on Monday and promptly set about undoing the legacy of the Biden administration, passing a flurry of executive orders opposing diversity, equity, and inclusion, writing trans people out of existence, and declaring a national emergency at the border. On Instagram, Ella Emhoff called it truly insane and a honor to have been the second daughter, and she took aim at her critics. For those who made it harder, you suck. The 25-year-old model and designer was a frequent target of the pro-Trump right, who came after her for things like wearing a sleeveless top and a Harris Walls camo hat at the Democratic National Convention. In the post, Emhoff shared a carousel of photos of herself and her brother, Cole, at the 2021 Biden-Harris inauguration, where she wore an embellished Miu Miu coat. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.